You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now, next up, I have another story that I spoke to Minister Martin about last week, but didn't have the time to air. It concerns a Facebook post by the Minister that I found shared on the Facebook group of a page that advocates against transgender rights. Now, to give some context on the Minister's involvement on issues affecting gender, earlier this year, Minister Martin sponsored a bill to change the process of changing gender on birth certificates to allow for an optional X gender marker alongside M and F for male and female. This change was largely applauded by those who don't see their gender as fitting into predefined societal constructs. However, to the disappointment of the gender diverse community, the bill was delayed, with Minister Martin citing insufficient legal public consultation on changes made by the Select Committee surrounding self-identification. Groups that were particularly vocal on the concerns about self-identification included Speak Up for Women, whose beliefs include that trans women are not women. Now, to turn to the post in question, it concerns the recent Stats New Zealand announcement to collect both biological sex information as well as gender information. This was also largely supported by the trans community, with the slight caveat of some preferring sex to be modified instead to sex assigned at birth, in order to catch those who are intersex or don't fall into clear-cut categories. In her post, Minister Martin was encouraging people to have a say on the changes, but what concerned me about it was being shared by a third party to an anti-trans Facebook page, and that their values seemed to go against what the minister's political stance and intentions in making the post were. To avoid any doubt, I clarified with the minister her position on this issue.
I believe it is necessary to collect biological sex data and gender identity data. Why do I believe that's important? Because actually we don't have, as government, we don't have a strong enough picture of the gender diverse community. And if we don't have a strong enough picture of the size of the community, then we can't do workforce planning for the services that are required for that community. So everything I do around any topic, it tends to be a very, very practical, from a very, very practical perspective. And so I believe that that information, both sets of information, need to be collected, because we use the information for different purposes, but actually there is a new purpose. And that's out of the work that I've been doing on the Births, Deaths and Marriages Bill, with the working group that I put together, with conversations that I have had with the parents of trans children. We do not have the appropriate amount of specialist services for these New Zealanders, and I need data to be able to argue, if I'm back here again, for the appropriate level of services to be provided for this group of New Zealanders.
I then asked the Minister, with that in mind, how she felt about her post being shared and applauded on a Facebook group for radical feminists who oppose the rights of transgender women as women. In response to that, she asked me to define exactly what I meant by that term.
I'm kind of interested. Who decided that they were trans-exclusionary radical feminists?
Well, I guess the idea comes from their beliefs are trans-exclusionary and therefore making it a kind of... Now, I tried my best to give what I understood the meaning of the term to be, but it occurred to me at that point that I was neither an expert nor representative of the transgender or gender-diverse community. So I contacted Ahi Wehongi from Gender Minorities Aotearoa, who support Takatoa Pui, transgender and intersex New Zealanders. They gave me a better understanding of the history of the term.
One of the things I think is interesting about the term trans-exclusionary radical feminists is that it came from radical feminists who, by and far, were welcoming of trans people. But at the point where there started to be anti-trans campaigners, they wanted to distinguish the fact that they didn't all share those hateful views. And so they said, OK, these ones are the trans-exclusionary radical feminists, and the rest of us are just radical feminists. And nowadays, these anti-trans campaign groups are usually actually not radical feminists. They're usually not feminists at all, but it's a convenient cover-up. You know, it's a convenient guise to go behind and to try and position their hate campaigns as though it's a debate and feminists are on one side and trans people on the other side, when in reality, almost all feminists in New Zealand are on the trans side of that. You know, like almost all feminists in New Zealand, and certainly all of the big feminist organisations, including all of the big women's organisations, which are generally feminist organisations, are in support of trans women. Like the National Council of Women came out and made statements, you know, to say that trans women are women and should have the same rights as other women. You know, and so there's this tiny little group of people who are just anti-trans. You know, if you look at National Council of Women's website, you will see all of the amazing work that they do for women. If you look at the website of an anti-trans campaign group, you will just see campaigns that are about stopping trans women, occasionally about stopping women and who are sex workers from having legal protection. And those are the only issues that they focus on. The exclusionary element, I think, as well, is something that is sometimes a little misunderstood, because it's not about just excluding trans women from certain spaces or from women's spaces, and it's not even about excluding trans women from feminism. It's about excluding trans women from human rights. So the campaigns that they have, the laws that they try to have changed, the policies that they want in place are the ones that pertain to trans women's human rights. So, you know, you have a right to dignity, and you have a right to adequate healthcare, and you have a right to education. You have a human right to be allowed to have identity documents in this country. And those are the things that they're attacking, and those are the things that they don't want trans women to have.
Now, often this term trans-exclusionary radical feminist is shortened to TERF, which some view as having derogatory connotations, which can be understood somewhat from just the way that the word sounds. But Tracy Martin raised the issues she sees with using such terms.
The biggest problem I have with this type of a statement, trans-exclusionary radical feminist, is it shuts down all conversation. So what's happened here is you've got two groups of people with different perspectives, two groups of people who have a different point of view. And we're calling one group of people a name. It does not help us to have a conversation to address the actual issue. So there is an issue here. There absolutely is an issue here, and it is around the respect of a group of New Zealanders as they try to live their lives. And by disrespecting another group of New Zealanders, it doesn't help us have a conversation. I want to address the actual problem, and that is around a group of New Zealanders who are discriminated against because of the way they live their lives.
Now, I completely agree with Minister Martin that name-calling is never conducive to healthy debate, but would note that unfortunately this name-calling happens on both sides of the debate, with anti-trans groups making dehumanising jokes about gender identity or accusing trans people of having their own perverted ulterior motives for wanting to access women's spaces. It's also not just verbal abuse, but physical abuse that trans people encounter regularly just for being themselves. Ahiwi Hongi says they don't necessarily believe that Minister Martin sides with the views of these groups, but talks about what makes it so hard for politicians especially to dismiss their views by putting up a more moderate front.
Personally, I don't think Tracy Martin agrees with the anti-trans campaigners. I think they try to make it look like she does, but I don't think that's really the case. I think the problem is that when you get into the hard questions, you really need to know the facts. Like you need to know the science, and you need to know what the human rights specific laws are. You need to know how that plays out in trans people's lives. You need to know all the research. So I think that when it gets down to the nuanced and complicated questions, I think that people are a little bit vulnerable to being misled by the anti-trans campaigners. And the reason people think that they have to be in the middle on this is because the anti-trans campaigners have intentionally framed it as being about women and feminism. And once you see through that and you realise they're not about women and they're not about feminism, then, you know, that desire to hear both sides drops away, because if they called themselves what they are, which is an anti-trans campaign group, you know, nobody would feel the need to give them time and listen to their side of the story. Because we don't sit down with white supremacists and say, well, let's let them have a say as well, do we?
Ahiwi Hongi elaborates more on why they don't believe such groups can be considered feminist groups.
Yeah, as a feminist myself, I would not particularly call them feminists. If you look on their website, all of their campaigns are about stopping trans women from being able to participate in society. So none of their campaigns are about better wages for women. They're not about reproductive rights. they're not campaigning on women in poverty or women who have their children in state care. There are no campaigns that are about supporting women generally. All of their campaigns are about stopping trans women. So when a group is just focused on stopping a particular demographic of women from accessing human rights, they're not a feminist group, they're just an anti-trans campaign group.
In terms of the Facebook post, Minister Martin says she doesn't mind them using her words as long as they don't change it or alter her meaning. However, her post was encouraging people to speak out and submit to Stats New Zealand, which prompted me to ask, are there some voices we don't need to encourage? And when can there be a legitimate limit on freedom of expression when it causes harm? Now, Tracy rightly called me out on my own apparent sympathy to one of the sides of this argument.
If they agreed with you, would you be asking me for limits for their ability to speak? That's the problem. Most people ask me, will you stop those people speaking because they don't agree with them? But they, when somebody agrees with them, they want them to have the capacity to articulate that thought process all the time. We are always going to come up against people that we don't agree with. The bit that I would say where we need to monitor free speech is when people are inciting hatred or harm, like physical harm against others, physical, psychological or whatever harm. And with regard to what I have control over, my Facebook pages, I delete those people, I block those people and I delete their posts. That's the control I have. I won't spread it.
Now, it is true that there are some viewpoints that as a society we don't agree that need to be heard, such as those of white supremacists. I put this proposition to Minister Martin.
I feel like there are some views that as a society we have agreed aren't appropriate to be expressed. For example, things like white supremacy, you know, they go so far down that line of being harmful.
Yes, but there is that we don't actually, and again, there's a line. We don't actually go, because somebody belongs to a white supremacist group, just because they belong to a white supremacist group does not mean we go and arrest them. There are actions that people take that we say we will not accept as a society. You know, just because you belong to a group, the police cannot, therefore, come and arrest you. I mean, otherwise, you know, everybody who's wearing a mongrel mob patch and a black power patch and all that would all just be arrested on the street tomorrow. There is an action that has to be taken before the state can decide to incarcerate you or restrict your freedom.
While it is true that words are just words until they become hate speech, that is, it is important to note, however, that the voices we give a platform to can have real, tangible effects on policy. To illustrate this, Ahi Wehonge told an anecdote about a report that was commissioned by the United States National Center for Healthcare Technology about trans healthcare. Its findings on the ethical and social implications of such health services was informed exclusively by the quote-unquote research of a single person, Janice Raymond, the author of a book, The Transsexual Empire, which Wehonge paraphrases as insisting that the medical industry is teaming up with trans people to make more people trans in order to make lots of money. This research was then relied on to stop public funding to trans healthcare in the US, and as Wehonge suggests, is a contributing factor to why we also don't have very good trans healthcare here in New Zealand. It is, I think, a lesson in hearing a breadth of voices and also being critical of who we give a platform to. Wehonge elaborates on more of the adverse effects faced by the transgender community, showing that words do have real impact.
On the topic of trans people and human rights, there is a lot of information and it points to trans people being 1% of the population, being heavily discriminated against, actually not having much of a voice or not being listened to very consistently, and having worse health outcomes and housing outcomes and education and just life outcomes because of that discrimination and not having a voice. And then there are the anti-trans campaigners who are saying, well, they're drowning out the voice of women who are almost 50% of the population. They're going to silence women completely and nobody's going to be allowed to, you know, it doesn't make sense.
Now, it would be naive to assert this is a simple issue. There are undoubtedly conversations that need to be had, such as the effect on certain religious beliefs, as Tracy Martin highlights.
The Muslim community, for example, has a religious practice that women must be separated from men, and that is around biological sex. Where is the conversation with the Muslim community about their belief structures and how this will affect them? And where is the conversation, the wider conversation then, about, well, that's them practicing their religion. Is that acceptable to wider New Zealand? If not, why not? If it's not, what are we going to do about it now? And we accept in this country that people have the right to their religious beliefs as long as they don't harm others. So how does that interact? This is why we have to have a conversation. It's not as simple as just saying, we're going to give you a certificate over here and then it's all going to go away. We need to have a conversation about respect, and it's respect for everybody.
Ahi Wehongi notes that gender roles are not unique only to Muslim religion, but also parts of other cultures. They express concern, however, about such trans-exclusionary groups relying on the values of these minority groups only when it furthers their interests.
There certainly are trans women who are Muslim, and, you know, in every culture there are trans people, and there have always been trans people throughout history. And so, you know, there are different ways that different groups deal with people who are of all different genders.
I mean, I think in terms of anti-trans campaign groups trying to use other minority women as an excuse for their, you know, anti-trans agenda, I mean, if they were out there campaigning for Muslim women because they've been asked by Muslim women to do that, then surely they would be looking at other issues that are affecting Muslim women. You know, there's a lot of prejudice and hate against Muslim women, and a lot of danger and, you know, a lot of discrimination that's happening to Muslim women on many different fronts. I think that trans women existing isn't even on the radar. You know, like, that is such a low priority in terms of, you know, what Muslim women need to have equal rights in this country. If they cared about what Muslim women need, they would be asking and they would be finding out, and it would be nothing to do with trans women. So it's it's one of those, like another case of trying to appropriate other cultures and speak on their behalf without their permission. I know that for Muslim trans women who our organisation is in contact with, of course there are some difficulties, and that is true across all cultures. You know, some different and some similar concerns are had by women in my culture and Māori culture, and also I think in mainstream Pākehā culture as well. You know, if a trans woman is going into a gendered space, is she allowed to go in as a woman? If a trans woman is on a marae, does she do the woman's role or does she do the men's role? The answer to that is almost always she does the woman's role. You know, but there might be rules. There are some marae which say if you're a non-binary gender, you have to pick one of the roles to do because maybe there isn't a non-binary role to do. But again, we're talking about like cultural roles in a specific context, which I don't think that these anti-trans campaign groups generally have any idea about, because they're not actually interested. They're not about rights for ethnic minorities. They're only concerned about how things might impact those ethnic minorities if that suits their own agenda to stop trans people from having human rights.
This is undoubtedly a complex issue, and I understand Minister Martin's reluctance to shut down any voices. However, what would make for better democratic debate is the elevation of the concerns voiced by the actual gender and cultural minorities affected, and not by those whose only mandate is to deprive the rights of another group.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.